Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, April 4th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a pretty nice 56 degrees in misting here in upstate New York. But I think spring is trying to sprung here. We have squirrels and birdies galore. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Microwaves, DOD, Energy Weapons, Rumsfeld, General Myers, and Iraq. And we ended up the show looking at a disturbing exchange between Norah O'Donnell, who at that time was on the press corps for NBC. She now works on CBS This Morning. And she is Charlie Rose, Mr. CFR, as her handler. I was going to look up, I don't know though, I didn't, as to whether or not she and Charlie were friends even back then, but Mr. CFR now makes sure that he keeps Norah in check on her morning show, but she threw a couple hardballs at General Myers and Donald Rumsfeld in regards to new weaponry potentially being used in Iraq. And if anyone did not see that video, I will include it again in the notes. I'll put it at the top this time in case you missed it. But Democracy Now! Had done an in-depth expose about some things that were going on in Iraq during the Second Gulf War. And I have found now in three or four different references that energy weapons were already being tinkered with in the first Gulf War. So I would not have any doubt at all that some of the strange things that the troops saw and some of the strange things reported by international agencies weren't a figment of their imagination. I mean, many of us know people who were involved in one or both of the Gulf Wars and came back with some really strange problems physically, whether it be immune system problems or very bad health problems after. I think that they were doing a lot of things that we weren't aware of in the Gulf War. Remember, that was Daddy CIA Bush and then good old Georgie Bush to follow. But then led to 9/11 and everything else that's transpired since then. By the way, did you guys see, after all these years, just a few days ago, I think it may have even been yesterday, it's either yesterday or Friday, they decided to release some new pictures of the Pentagon right after 9/11. And there weren't even any explanations. Claire Burnesh did a story on it for Free Thought Project. And I really had to kind of scratch my head because, you know, some of us have questioned and looking at those photos and studying what happened that day. I mean, there were multiple different crash sites and there were multiple issues with each different crash site. But the one in particular that some pictures came out of the other day was the Pentagon, the one, you know, where there was no debris for the wings or anything. I remember the day that happened. We were like, where are the wings? But they released some additional pictures that showed like a close-up of a crumpled piece of metal that had like a C on it. Like it came out of the middle of the American Airlines logo. Then there was another crumpled piece. And like it's not even, there was no distinction as to where these pieces were found or how they were found. Just close-up photos of crumpled metal with very specific identifiers on them, so you could tell it was from an American Airlines flight. Doesn't tell you really which one. I guess one had a little, one did have like some sort of ID plate on it, but I don't know. It just, after all these years, and you're going to release these few pictures with these very obscure, no explanation, crumpled pieces of metal, like, see, here it is. It just seemed to me like it was more bullshit of the same narrative that they've been trying to sell everyone. Like, believe us, here's the proof, shut up. And I don't know, it kind of got my blood pressure up, so I didn't dig too much into it, but you should go check it out. I will add that one in the notes as well, because it seems, too, that 9/11 has been coming up a lot lately in regards to these topics that we've been talking about now. I'm not going to get to New York City and 9/11, but there definitely were some theorists out there. And I mean, this is where things got a little strange. You know, architects and engineers came out and said, yeah, absolutely. The when Building 7 went down, especially, that most certainly was a controlled demolition. And I don't know, argue with that or not, but I would think the art engineers and the architects would be the ones that I would be maybe paying attention to versus, you know, some news guy who's giving you his opinion. But there were other stories that came out about the other buildings with directed energy weapons and things of that nature. And I don't know, Dr. Judy Wood, she was a guest once on Orion. I heard her interview. I'm not going to say that maybe she didn't have some good theories. I have seen no evidence, but I don't know, maybe I have now. Up until this point, I've seen no evidence that we even potentially had space-based or high up in the clouds-based energy weapons that could do some major damage. But over the last few days especially, we've been reading about some of these things that were reported in Iraq. We read about that Democracy Now! Interview that I don't remember her first name, Amy Goodman, had aired. Listening to the two surgeons talking about the body parts just spewed all over the inside of this bus, yet the driver was still alive. There was another report before that of a vehicle that had gotten hit, and everyone in the vehicle, their heads were roasted. Just the heads. Now, how does that happen? The car is still intact, the people are still in the vehicle. They obviously got hit by something. And it looked like it came from maybe inside the vehicle or somehow through the roof of the vehicle, and their heads were cooked. Nothing else. I mean, that obviously, even if it was a chemical weapon, don't you think they'd all be melted? Not just their heads. There are reports of limbs being sliced off in the bus and heads being cut off, nice, clean, bzz, all kinds of innards sprayed inside, yet the bus was still intact. And there were no bullet holes anywhere. And the driver was still driving the bus to the hospital. And on that road of death, highway of death, I called my friend again last night. He wanted to know if I talked about the highway of death on the show, and I did. Well, he sent me more pictures. And I'm going to tell you, it is literally like somebody knocked all those vehicles off the road. The road is all blackened, but you would expect with mortar fire or something like that that would cause blackening, that it would leave some sort of crater. I mean, maybe. I guess it could have been a whole bunch of grenades. But it sure seemed to me. And there was one picture that was like looking way off into the distance, and it just went on and on and on. This entire caravan of vehicles just all at once. So all I'm saying is, I was a skeptic. I was even a skeptic for any of this stuff back 6 years ago. I didn't believe any of this stuff was real. I happily went along and did my 9 to 5. Showed up all dressed up in a suit to go meet with alphabet positions within a corporation, CFO, CIO, CTO, to go sell them more networks to connect to the machine. That's what I was doing before all this. And this was tinfoil hat wearing lunatic stuff for weirdos out there, like, I don't know. I think back then, I don't know if I listened to any conspiracy. Even X-Files was over way, way, way back. See, in the 90s, I was an Art Bell fan. UFOs were like the one conspiracy that I maybe could get behind. And now, I mean, I think I dug enough personally because my dad and Wernher von Braun and Antarctica and listening to Mae Brussels. And then I saw a couple Russian documentaries that are out there about Antarctica and Germany. I'm going to tell you guys, I'm pretty certain that the majority of any flying spacecraft that we see now, and remember, this is another part of where a lot of this research I've run into, like Russia and even the CIA back in the 50s and the 60s, 40s, 50s, 60s, even the 70s, they were looking at ESP and all of this parapsychology stuff, including UFOs, as potentials for warfare. Now, where have we seen that before? Oh, Hitler was doing stuff like that over in Nazi Germany. Yes, he had a couple different teams. And I've dug into the Operation Paperclip teams that were pre-Paperclip. Just because my dad, if anyone who didn't know, my dad was in Antarctica in the 60s. And on his flight down, Wernher von Braun flew down with them. They were down there for winter over for a year. And there's a couple Christmas specials we've had my father on a few times to talk about his year down in Antarctica in the 60s, pre-going to the moon. And I have to tell you, they're definitely, all my life I've known about that story, but I never understood the significance of it. So I've spent a lot of time, in my personal time, that I only have talked about it a couple times on air in depth, trying to dig into what was going on. And some of the things my dad told me he saw and whatever. And I am convinced now, I would have to say probably 90%+. And probably more convinced than just about anyone else out there that's not in the military who didn't have a parent that went to Antarctica. Because the Wernher von Braun thing was a big deal. That the UFOs that we have seen, at least starting in 1947, Roswell, and then Foo Fighter thingies, had to do with the technology that we brought over here from Germany. I'm convinced. There were reports from Admiral Byrd, and I really, if there's anybody out there that can find me an official report out of Argentina, because that's where Byrd was sent by the president down to Antarctica, and it was of the utmost importance. And I don't remember all the exact details, but there were reasons that were secrets. It was a classified mission that they sent Admiral Byrd. He had a battalion of like 4,000 with him from different countries, and they had all these Navy battleships and stuff. It was an official trip. He went down to Antarctica. Now, this was right at the end of World War II. Now, I found a Russian documentary a few years ago that was all subtitled, but it was about after World War II, a lot of the Nazi senior generals and things hopped into U-boats and took off for their secret lair under the ice in Antarctica. You're going to say, under the ice in Antarctica? Come on, it's so inhospitable down there. But I'm going to tell you something. So my listeners who have been listening for a long time know, having heard my dad in the interviews, that back 50 years ago last year, he told me, he didn't tell me 50 years ago, but 50 years ago when he was down there last year, he told me that they had big rooms full of fish tanks with live prehistoric tropical fish in them that they brought up from under the ice in Antarctica. Ding! Now that's one of those things that most nobody would have known until last year, 50 years after the fact. One of my science magazines that I read often comes out with a story about how, hey, look, we found tropical fish under the ice in Antarctica. How amazing is that? It took them 50 years to tell us. Just about tropical fish. But here's a big deal. Now, I spent a lot of time, you know, I've been a closet scientist for the majority of my life, engineer in real life, but I'm one about science and geology and just how all the ecosystems work. And one of the things that I thought about is that if we had to look at logic and how we'd end up with tropical fish, underneath a big block of ice would be this. Now, first of all, we know that they've done core samples of the ice. Years ago, they did, and they were already finding fossilized, well, I don't even know if they're fossilized, just frozen palm fronds and things. They already know that Antarctica, some way or other, had been tropical at one point in the past, whether it was plate tectonics and it has now moved to a position where it's icy, or if maybe there was some big climate shift, whether we had a pole shift or something. Who knows? Who knows? But that's besides the point because it doesn't matter. At one point, yes, Antarctica was tropical. But it's not tropical anymore, Jewel. It's all frozen. How could we still have fish alive? Well, what people don't realize is that this was not going to be my topic du jour, but hey, we'll get back to energy weapons. Because Antarctica is always another one of those pieces that you can plug into lunacy theory that sometimes might end up being true. But anyway, what most people don't realize is that Antarctica is a volcanic continent. And yes, it is a continent, one of seven. I don't know. Are there still seven continents? I thought there were nine planets and there aren't anymore. Anyways, one of the continents. We were doing geography yesterday, helping with homework. And we've had a full globe here since she was little. So I made her go upstairs and find the globe in the closet. So she did. And we did geography and hemispheres yesterday. I was taking a good look at Antarctica on the globe. But Antarctica has Mount Erebus. Mount Erebus was not too far from where the U.S. base was. And Mount Erebus was also where an Air New Zealand full of tourists. Bet you didn't know this one either. I mean, you think I would have seen this on the news or heard about it through the grapevine. Since it happened in 1979, I had flown down there with my family in 1977 to see my family on an Air New Zealand, no less. And in 1979, an Air New Zealand DC-10, just like we flew down there on, was doing a sightseeing tour over Antarctica. Again, strange since Antarctica has a special place in my heart because of my dad being down there at some point. And this sightseeing tour was misdirected, and they weren't told to pull up, and it was bad weather, and they slammed into Mount Erebus, and all 200 and some odd people on that plane died. Now, who knew they were doing sightseeing tours in 1979 of Antarctica? I don't know, guys. There definitely is something odd. Of course, it was a champagne tour. So we can guarantee you that the only people back then who were flying down there, because I guess they're offering them now at a commercial price. But I mean, even to fly commercially down to Australia or New Zealand was thousands and thousands of dollars back in the 70s. You know, just to make a long distance phone call was hundreds of dollars for just a few minutes. You're allowed to do it once a year at Christmas time. But I can't even imagine what it would have cost for a whole plane of people to go for a full sightseeing tour in 1977 over Antarctica. I bet you it was a $20,000 trip for only the rich, famous, and elite. It was a very well-to-do. But anyway, back to these tropical fish. So Mount Erebus, most people don't realize, is still an active volcano. My dad said I used to just smoke all the time. You could just see it smoking all the time. And, you know, the continent of Africa, it does have land mass underneath it, but a lot of it is ice shelf as well. If you take a look at a map, they do have maps out there that'll show the land mass versus the ice mass. There is a lot of ice that goes around the borders that isn't on any land mass as well. That was where my dad warned, don't ever go stand over there. Not that it breaks off, because it's pretty thick, but apparently the whales are hungry. Anyone remembers that last special we did? The whales are hungry and they can see you. They can see your shadow from down below the ice shelf. So always make sure there's land under you because the whales will come right up through the ice and open their mouths wide, and you go gulp and you're gone as they take a dive again. So don't do that. One of the lessons I learned from my dad's trip in Antarctica. I should do a book. Anyway, but this volcanic activity, and especially the fact that Mount Erebus is still active, could be a very logical explanation for where these tropical fish are coming from, because I'm going to guess somewhere along there, if we have tectonic plates or some sort of volcanic action going on, you gotta imagine that somewhere on the sea floor, and I have not looked for a sea map. They don't have a lot of maps of the sea floor yet, but don't worry because all those Hydra drones are down there now. So we might get some Google Maps out of them yet. But with tectonic activity and volcanic activity, it's very potentially going to be going on at the ocean floor. You have vents that vent out, certainly, especially like I said, if there is an active volcano going on, that magma is coming from somewhere. So my guess is going to be that you have volcanic vents along the ocean floor, potentially underneath not only the continent, but maybe under some of the ice. And as that heat is spewing out in the water, you might have some hospitable areas, even though the water might be cold, where prehistoric tropical fish could have been alive for millions of years, because Mount Erebus is still spewing, and lived in a cone of heat. And as that heat is rising, another thought of mine was, well, if you got 30 feet of ice glacier above you, or 30 feet, 30 miles of ice glacier above you, that's pretty damn deep. But if you've had all these years of little bubbles of heat coming up, maybe it caused some melty holes on the underside that can only be found while underwater doing exploratory missions like, oh, I don't know, a U-boat or a submarine. And when you bob up under that ice, oh, you're inside a warm, hidden, hospitable place that, hey, it might even connect to land. And on that land, you might have some sort of tropical fauna. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how sun would get down through there, but if it's all clear ice, if it's shiny ice, I don't know. Maybe some of the rays can get down. All I'm saying is, it is very possible that a lot of what we've read historically about Antarctica and the complete and utter white vanilla package that they've put on it. I mean, they don't make you think that there's anything really spectacular. We've had bases down there for what? 50 plus, 60 plus years. And what big discoveries have we heard about? Not many. The only ones that are really kind of rocking the boat a little bit would be the Russians down there. Remember, my dad said they drank with the Russians too. They had dinner with them. But the Russians, one of the big things that like made me go, whoa, is that they were drilling into Lake Vostok. Now, Lake Vostok was a scary lake. I think that's where they found that 3 million year old bacteria that, is that where that bacteria came from? That scientist, that longevity, Russian longevity scientist decided he was going to inject himself with it. Very possible. But, you know, like the Russians did some stuff that made me go, whoa, have you ever seen the movie The Thing? But, you know, at least from the American side of things, what have we ever seen? Where they've made an announcement out of Antarctica, we've had this base and whatever. Now, I found out in my research, one of the reasons why they sent the military down there was to see psychologically how isolation would make these men go a little bit crazy before they sent them up to space. Now, my dad told me when he signed up for this, and I don't know, I think it was between go to Vietnam or go to Antarctica. He chose Antarctica. They sent him for a psychological exam. And see, now that makes a lot more sense as well, because they sent him for a psychological exam because they were sending him into isolation for a whole year. And I'm certain that they were observed. Those pods on the McMurdo Sound base are very much like a Space 1999 pod thing. I don't know if you've ever looked at them, but if you just search like military base Antarctica, you'll see them. They got little legs and things. It's like the type of thing you'd set up on Mars or the moon or whatever. And there's not a lot of room. If you ever saw the thing, you probably would have seen they were like metal sheds without too much fanfare. They gave them lots of booze and lots of steaks and put them in isolation, but there were questions as to what was going on down there. Like I said, I've seen now a couple different things. May Brussels was one, talking about the Nazi UFO base down there and some of their research. I dug into some of the Operation Paperclip scientists and what their expertises were. And you had a couple different teams. You had the rocket team, and that was the one that Wernher von Braun was in charge of. They brought most of them over here to the United States to go get on the moon eventually. And there was another team, and they were the ones that were into the occult. And that occult team, those were the ones that you typically saw in movies like Indiana Jones, where they were looking for the Ark of the Covenant and all these other things, the Holy Grail. Because Hitler thought that there were some powers in some of this ancient mystic stuff. He wanted to find out. He wanted to run some tests on it and give it to scientists. And one of the things that I remember reading about was that he sent them to India to go look at those Vimanas. And if you remember, Salvinor did a few good shows reading the book that the Vimanas came out of. If you search Vimana, V-I-M-A-N-A, and ancient India, you probably don't even have to. I don't remember the name of the book that it came out of. I always want to say the Bhagavad Gita, but maybe, I don't know, I don't ever say it right. But they give sketches, and I mean, this book was like 9,000 years old, potentially. They give sketches. They talk about them, first of all, and about the great wars in the sky and the gods coming and blah, blah, blah. But they give sketches to these bell-shaped craft that had liquid mercury anti-gravity systems inside of them. 9,000 years old. So, you know, when you take a look at some of that technology and then knowing about Hitler being interested in occult and ancient knowledge, and then that they had started experimenting with some of this stuff. 1947 happens. The war is over. A lot of these people take off. There was some sort of secret base. May Brussels had talked about their secret UFO facility in Antarctica. And then, like I said, I ran across just last year a Russian documentary with subtitles that it talked about after the war, and about a lot of these people getting into U-boats and taking off for Antarctica with their secret labs under the ice. They've been working on some of this technology. Sorry, I had to sneeze. We have warm weather now, so I think pollen is starting. And then from Antarctica, they escaped to Argentina. But in the meantime, you have Wernher von Braun now. We had Admiral Byrd who showed up in 47, said he got attacked by these things called Foo Fighters. They all came up out of the water. They had a big battle and all kinds of people died. And supposedly one of the battleships got sunk and he retreated to Argentina. Now, according to the official story, they left Antarctica because winter was coming and the weather got bad. So they turned around and they left. But if you look at the original mission, he was dictated by the president. And it was of the utmost of national security that he come down to Antarctica. And then they just left because the weather was bad. I'm like, what? But there are reports that he retreated to Argentina, where he filed his report about these things. He talked about this land under the ice. I don't know. I don't know if I believe any of this hollow earth crap, because that to me seems way tinfoil hatty. I don't know if I even believe the alien crap. Oh, there's aliens living in the middle of the earth down in Antarctica. You know what, guys? That's like that tin can game with people whispering in the can. And it's just gotten to be fantastical. And then you really get out the tinfoil hats, because when I look at some of that, even when I was a tinfoil hat wearer back in the 90s and believed it was all aliens, I'm not believing so anymore. I have found dots that went ding, 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 that have connected humans to all of this. Now, I saw, too, now they're talking that we're working with the aliens. Well, I still don't think so. I think the aliens were the Nazis. They were all the Nazi mad scientists who were doing human experimentation and didn't give two shits about human life or ethics or anything like that. It was pure, utter evil. That's who we started working with. And even more interesting, so right after the supposed event with Admiral Byrd, where, and not only did they see Foo Fighters, but he claims there was this tropical world at the top of Antarctica with all these plants and beautiful people. I was even thinking, beautiful blonde people. Wait a minute. Weren't the Nazis also messing with eugenics? I think they said that this was called New Swabia or something was the name of the Nazi place down there. I mean, maybe these weren't aliens. Maybe these were genetically modified perfect Germans. I'm telling you guys, there are puzzle pieces that have all gone together in my head over this. But look, right after all this happened and Admiral Byrd ended up back in the United States, this is after he went to Argentina retreat, what also did we have the first of in 1947? Oh, wait a minute. Super secret military research facilities in New Mexico, Los Alamos Laboratory and Skunk Works and things. Yes. And what? Oh, we had Roswell. Oh, what? It was a saucer-shaped craft. What? It had weird writing on it. Guys, I'm telling you. And then all of a sudden, Majestic 12 came into the picture. This was right when the CIA was doing all these psyops. They'd already proven that a population is easier to take over if you get them to come all together in harmony over an external threat, such as things like aliens. And that was Ronnie Reagan talking about that while they were covertly not developing Star Wars. Right? All right, guys. So all I'm saying is they're just, I mean, we've already uncovered so much of the deception that has been our history. We've established that a lot of these technologies that we're talking about now, a lot of these energy weapon technologies and that came actually from like the communications fields, came from them learning to master directed radio frequencies, Bell Laboratories, a lot of smarty pants, lots of collaboration with other laboratories with lots of smarty pants that may or may not have been affiliated with the military, all in the name of, you know, communication systems and radar and all these other things. Don't believe something because someone told you, except in the Antarctica case, because there's not a lot of that out there, but you can put together those pieces. But like I said, I have a piece of the puzzle that isn't out there, and that was a dad who was down there and saw things 50 years back that we probably will never see, well, except for the fish, we'll never see in the news. And it just makes you wonder, that was just one moment in time. And we have generations of time that once the official narrative is written and all the people who actually lived it the first time around are gone, there's no one to argue the story anymore. You know, now you only have secondhand or, quote unquote, the official story. And then even when the secondhand people give up because there really is no proof, A couple more generations go by, anybody, anything could be now involved. They could change the story anyway, because who's going to remember? And, as they're getting rid of print, I just saw Kurzweil was talking about something in the future. All the books, everything's going to be e-book, blah, 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 blah. E-books. I don't particularly like reading e-books. If I'm reading a book, I really like to have a solid book. If you try and hold a tablet or something in your hand, I don't know if you notice, but like that little area next to your thumb there starts to get real sore. I like holding a book. Plus, you can feel satisfaction when you see 372 pages on the red side of the bookmark versus the unread. But, once physical books go away, being able to be all 1984-ish and edit things and make things disappear, like this interview that we saw with Rumsfeld and Richard Myers, General Richard Myers, with questions being asked by Nora O'Donnell during a press conference about energy weapons, things like that will be made to disappear. Poof. Erase the evidence. I think we should make things like this go viral time and time again so people don't forget this one instance out of all this research we've read and all these scientists being able to prove the effects of microwave radiation and all these stories about Defense Department budgets working on directed energy weapons that came out in 2016. Are you kidding me? We have found stuff, like I said, I found two instances over the last few days, 1999 and 1991. We had some significant advances. So I'm going to get back to where I should have started, and I spent 39 minutes talking about stuff that probably made people who didn't know about any of that stuff go, okay, Jewel. But oh, no. There's definitely, I think the whole Antarctica thing is a part of this. This is part of super secret military technology that's been happening for a very long time that we haven't known about. That's the connecting dot. So, this Iraqi energy weapon, like I said, we found out, or body parts and whatever. We found out General Myers had admitted, and I'm going to read the end of that because I got rudely cut off by my bumper and drowned out. So you couldn't exactly hear what he said. We had a press conference. We had Nora O'Donnell asking questions of Rumsfeld and General Myers. They were both stumbling through their answers. Nora was a hard hitter. You had Rumsfeld wringing his hands, and he kept deflecting back to the general. And now the general has the spotlight on him. It's been deflected to him again. And Nora asks, she says, but this is to the general, you sound like you are willing to experiment with it. And this is these energy, directed energy weapons in Iraq. And General Myers says, yeah. I think that's the point. And I think dot 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 and it's dot dot dot. We have, I think, from the beginning of this conflict, I think General Franks has been very open to looking at new things. And if there are new things available, he says, he has been willing to put them into the fight even before they've been fully wrung out. And I think that's, and then he stops, dot, dot, dot. And in his as an afterthought, he says, well, not referring to these particular cases of directed energy or high-powered microwaves, but sure. And we will continue to do that. And this is where he did the finger cut across his neck while looking at Nora, telling her, shh, that's enough. So after we've established that, And we established that there's all kinds of millions, $40 million in 2014. Now a new resurgence in 2016 out of some of the military publications working on directed energy, because that is the way of the future. Here's a new story. It's out of Lockheed Martin. Technology that counters drone swarms. Like I said before, you gotta love all this brand new drone swarm technology. They've been working on that out of MIT in the Broad Institute. Remember that biologically inspired engineering, just like bumblebees and ants. Drones may be small, some weighing less than 5 pounds. Those are like little hummingbee drones, hummingbird drones. But they can cause devastating results if they are armed with weapons. And when there are 10, 20, or 100 of them in close proximity, drone swarms can be remotely operated from miles away. Yes, those good drone pilots we have been training with video games for the last 30 years. Drone swarms can be remotely operated from miles away, flying autonomously. Or they may accompany ground vehicles or other aircraft that attempt to harm our troops. And DARPA was working on this whole Plan X, which was to network together not only your ground troops and your drones, but your robots, your Atlas robots, and your pack. What did they call them? The pack mule ones. I don't remember what they were called. But they would all be connected and communicating very much similarly to the way they're talking about self-driving cars communicating, where it's going to be a big interconnected network that you'll be able to control, and they'll keep your perimeter forces. You'll be able to all exchange information and have your own little squadron, Plan X. I know I posted a PDF once from DARPA on that with all kinds of great diagrams. I'll see if I can find that for the notes. Drone swarms can be remotely operated from miles away, fly autonomously, or they may accompany ground vehicles and other aircraft that attempt to harm our troops. And only one of these remote-controlled weapons needs to get through to be potentially lethal. And remember, too, there's been all kinds of training now in urban warfare and utilizing drones. So put on a seatbelt. There's some really frightening stuff coming with this technology. Terrorists, of course, wink. Be afraid, be very afraid. And other militants can operate small, inexpensive drones loaded with weapons. Loaded with weapons. This is Lockheed Martin's advertisement. Loaded with weapons to threaten the U.S. and allied forces on the ground, says Daniel Miller, Chief Engineer for High Energy Laser Integration at Lockheed Martin Skunk Works. Ding, ding, ding-a-ding. And because of their size, these drones are difficult to see, very hard to catch on radar, and hard to shoot at with conventional weapons, particularly when they are in swarms. Guys, I mean, are we in bizarro world? Are you starting to see now how all these little pieces are starting to connect together? I used to have nightmares about swarms of these little triangular aircraft shooting lasers. I swear to God, over and over and over and over again when I was a kid. I never realized their drones didn't exist back then. I thought they were UFOs. They're not. They were drone swarms. Recently, a Q-53 radar, Bell Labs, who started helping them develop stuff like this. Recently, Q-53 radar showed that it can take on the challenging mission of detecting drones. And in a demonstration, remember, radar systems are also radio frequency. The radar system adapted to provide both air surveillance and counter fire target acquisition. And the Q-53 system detected and tracked several unmanned aerial systems and provided the data to the command and control post. To eliminate the drone threats, we rely on three steps. Detect, identify, and defeat. And we read about a laser weapon yesterday was yesterday. That was a turret. I'd written a story about it. It was a little portable one. You could actually add on battery packs or energy packs to make that laser more powerful. It only came in three little suitcases to start with, and they could mount it on the back of a truck or whatever, be out in the desert. Number one, detect. First, radar like the Q53 system would detect the threat and communicate that data through a battle management system. Yes, again, communication systems between your military units. And again, were things that Bell Laboratories helped develop way back in the very beginning. I don't know who's doing it now. It was Bell Labs in the very beginning, which would trigger a quote-unquote kill chain to begin its execution. Number two, identify as part of the kill chain, and that would be the chain of events to kill something, probably automatedly. Operators would monitor the progress of the targets and identify whether or not it is friendly or unfriendly. So make sure it is not a commercial jet. Number three, defeat. To defeat the threats designated as unfriendly, troops would activate the laser weapon system or choose to use a cyber system like Icarus. Now, funny we talked about Icarus earlier, I don't know, a few weeks ago, about how man's hubris is going to be our destruction. Icarus wanted to fly. Icarus used wax, and then Icarus got too close to the sun. Well, Icarus is now some sort of cyber system being used to take down the unmanned aerial drone swarms automatically. Lockheed Martin engineers are collaborating with customers and academia. Again, remember, it is the military academic commercial complex, I guess, to research, develop, and implement the technology that will detect and defeat swarms. We are currently developing a 60-kilowatt system, and this is the one, ding, ding, ding. This was that little mobile one that I wrote the story on, that combines multiple fibered lasers to generate high-powered weapon beams. Senior fellow at Lockheed Martin's Laser and Sensor System Division says, because the system relies on modular fiber lasers, it is easily scalable to meet different levels of power. Looking to the future of laser weapon systems, Icarus is part of the full spectrum cybersecurity environment. Ding, ding, ding. Full spectrum dominance is what they are going after. By acting in a more offensive capacity, the idea is to counter the drone before it becomes a threat to our warfighters or to our citizens. So make sure we mount anti-drone swarm, anti-aircraft systems on top of the large buildings in New York City. Oh, wait, we already did that. They sure did. As we prepare, though I don't know if it was energy weapons, but it was something. Actually, I don't know what they put up there. It was some sort of anti-aircraft gun, but I can't imagine it would be like some 50 caliber. That would be crazy. But who knows? I mean, the world is all crazy, it seems, today. As we prepare this critical technology for the future, we are already demonstrating the potential of laser weapons to take on new threats, says the director and chief engineer of Directed Energy Systems at Lockheed Martin Space Systems. Now, wait a minute, what? Space Systems? Directed Energy? Wait, what? He's at Skunk Works. Oh, wait, it all makes sense now. I don't know, guys. This, I'm telling you, I don't think any of this ever ended. I don't think Star Wars was ever kiboshed. I don't think any of this was ever kiboshed. I don't think, you know, the fact that we don't think laser and directed energy weapons has been even worked on, and they're making it sound like, oh, yeah, this is this new thing we're working on. No, 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 no. Back in the 90s, there is some evidence here that they may have even been experimenting with it. And oh, what, in the late 80s, that was when Reagan says, no, no, we'll stop. We'll stop all this stuff that we're working on with Star Wars. But I don't think they did. 1990s, We already have people saying that things might have been blasted out of the sky or other things like that. All right, before I run out of time, I'm going to take a next tippy toe. I guess we're going to spend our whole this whole week too on energy stuff, because I got a progression here of about 10 more tabs to get to that goes all the way back up to HARP in a document that I found on physics.org that had then been password protected, but I was able to find it in the cache documents. So I saved it as a PDF. I want to share it with you, but that won't be till a bit later because I'm not quite to HARP yet. There was a story from, looks like the original story was January of 2013, then it was updated March of 2014 out of globalresearch.ca. I know this was a publication that at one point Corbett was contributing to for a while. I know that anytime I've ever found any stories on globalresearch.ca, it's a Canadian publication, it's always been very in-depth. These guys are quite the researchers, and they're probably a lot more than I can even digest at times, but they definitely do their research here. So here's a story titled Psychotronic and Electromagnetic Weapons Remote Control of the Human Nervous System. Now, we're going to hop over here because we talked about a couple stories that came out of Wired Magazine. There were other military technologies. One was the sonic projector and the voice of God. Now, again, ties back to Iraq. Supposedly, my friend was telling me that it was just the day or two before that highway of death. So that was when the Iraqis all got on their knees and surrendered and put down their guns. And supposedly they were using this voice of God type technology on the Iraqis to do things like beam voices into their head. I ran across somewhere at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I don't know if I left this up or not. If not, after the show, I'll go into my history to find it. But I found a story back from the 90s of them talking about Blue Beam. And they said it was called Project Allah in the Sky, guys. They'd been talking about that in the 90s, around the time of the first Gulf War. I'm telling you, this stuff is not new. And like we already established when we went through the history of Bell Labs, that even our communication technologies, our high-end stuff, the wave division multiplexing, microwaves, cell phone technology for point-to-point, I mean, not necessarily the handhelds, but the way to allocate the spectrum and that type of thing and the hardware to do it has already been around since the early part of the 19th century. And they were already in bed with the military way, way back then. It's part of World War II. We found out even in something we read the other day that even Russia was getting into energy weapon and psychotronic research even before some of the established stuff that we saw in 1925 for Bell Labs. It's like, I think that one article said 1917 was when they started doing research in Russia. I'm sure that was when one of the czars was still in charge. So, all right, I guess we'll get to this global research because there's not very much time left. There's like 2 minutes. That's kind of a big one to start with. But here, let's go. We'll look at DARPA. DARPA and the story about the sonic projector. The story was from June of 2007. A voice only you can hear. Wired Magazine, DARPA's sonic projector. Again, mad science gone mad. Cutting edge technology for the military using some sort of energy weapon. And this time it's to mess with your head. Imagine a weapon that can create sound only that you can hear. Now, we established all this. We looked at microwave and all the weird things they could do with it last week. Is this science fiction? Well, no. This is one area that is a very solid basis in reality. The Air Force, again, has experimented with microwaves. Remember, I'm telling you, this is all tied to Space Command as well. This stuff is on satellites. And I think it has been. I think they blasted things on the ground. And I think all those body parts in Iraq were all part of some of these high-energy weapons. These high-energy weapons in high places, like as in orbit and as on towers and on aircraft. And they've been around for 20, 30 years, and they've been testing them, but now it's all balls out because all of our competitors, all of our adversaries are doing it as well. It says the Air Force has experimented with microwaves that create sounds in people's heads, which they are calling a possible psychological warfare tool, and American technologies that can beam sound specific to targets with their patented hypersound. And yes, I've heard and seen them demonstrate this, the speakers, and they are shockingly effective. And that was the author of the story saying this. And now DARPA is jumping on the bandwagon as well with their new sonic projector program. The goal of the program is to provide special forces with a method of surreptitious audio communication at distances over a kilometer. The sonic projector technology is based on nonlinear interaction of sound and air, translating an ultrasonic signal into an audible sound. The sonic projector will be designed to a manned deployable system using high power acoustical transducer technology and signal processing algorithms intended for the target. And the sonic projector system could be used to conceal communications for special operation forces and hostage rescue missions to disrupt enemy activities. So here's the question: if the military were to beam voices into your head, what would you see?
Anti-Media Radio, your host Nick Burnaby here on UCY.TV.